music. Let me turn this off.
Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told, and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is Fanny Crawford and
Stash Zilkowski,
your Storytelling Hour co-host at enlightenradio.org.
I had a moment there where I didn't know who I was.
Today, our theme is listening to a wise person's advice. Maybe not.
Good morning, Stosh.
Good morning.
Today's May 21st, Monday, and like every Monday at 12 noon, we're here to tell stories and listen to stories and generally create as much mayhem as we can
right
here on the radio.
And we begin the mayhem with Andy Offutt Irwin singing and playing the music for Tarry Here, which he has allowed us to use as our theme song.
Fortunately, because it's one of our very favorite songs.
It's just a wonderful song. And it embodies the whole idea of front porch storytelling. So you should be on your front porch with a glass of lemonade, coffee, and
mint juleps or something.
Or mint juleps. Okay, so before stories, we might mention a bit about storytelling this past week.
Well, I've had quite a week this past week. I was invited to tell T.H. Barnes stories and talk about writer's skills and traditional oral storytelling as well as print storytelling at Garrett College up at Deep Creek Lake. Not till July, at the end of July, but I'm going to put that up on Facebook, so if people are interested,
that
they can
great
come hear that. It's a 3-day conference. I'm only there for 1 2-hour period, but I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Will all the presenters be there?
On the day that I'm speaking?
On the day you're speaking?
I'm guessing, you know what conferences are like on Sunday. Half the audience
yeah
leaves, and certainly the presenters are all gone by Sunday.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah.
It's a small group anyway, because they're touring all the or several local museums in Garrett County and talking about researching local history and genealogy. And so they were limited by the number of people they could fit into these tiny little buildings. These are mostly old buildings and have old exhibits and lots of record keeping that goes back a long time. But they're not large places, you know, they're buildings that were built in the 1800s. So I think 30 is the maximum for this conference,
wow,
which is unusual, but I'm intending to have fun. So
well,
I'm excited.
And they're lucky to have you.
Well, and I'm substituting for Eloise Schottler, who had to bow out. And I am so grateful to her for naming me as a reasonable successor to her plan. So I'll be doing a different, slightly different workshop than she would have done. But we've talked about it, and she gave me some really good ideas and connections between her style and my style. So some of it will be very similar. And there's a lot of other things going on that weekend. There are people going to be talking about poetry and dreamscaping poetry and landscaping poetry, in the sense that you take into account your environment and go to a quiet, peaceful, loving place like Swallow Falls. They're going to spend time, the group, the 30 writers will be spending time at Swallow Falls and working with presenters up there who'll be doing poetry with them.
Reminds me of the 60s.
Well, Garrett County does have a little bit of that feel, but
yeah,
they've always done everything their own way. They are
right
not like anybody else in the world.
That's
so
true.
I'm really happy to be going up there. You know, that used to be part of my old stomping grounds, because when I was working full-time, Washington County, Maryland, Allegheny County, and Garrett County, Maryland, were all part of my turf. So I was up there several times a month, and it's so beautiful and a whole different pace of life. And the people are very independent-minded.
Well, I hope Eloise is prepared. She may have unleashed the dragon. People may stop calling Eloise. Say, I want that lady who took
your
place. I
don't think there's any danger of that. Eloise will be calling them if they forget to call Eloise. So we don't have to worry too much about that.
Well.
What's happening in your story world, Stosh?
The most exciting thing that happened this past week was yesterday, when there was a small workshop.
That was a wonderful workshop.
It was a wonderful workshop, and I was being helped with a story that I want to tell, and I want to be able to use in big venues. And I now have lots of work to do over the next few months, because
we did give you a lot of feedback, didn't we?
I have more notes than I took when I was studying for my master's degree.
Well, it's a wonderful, wonderful story, and I cannot wait to hear phase two.
Yeah. And my wife was even curious about it when I came home.
I bet she was.
She enjoyed hearing that she was involved in this story. And she knew that already, but I gave her a little glimpse of some of the ideas that I'm going to be working on.
Well, we'll have to keep our listeners updated as you make progress and are ready to tell publicly at some point.
That would be good. So, do you have a story for our listeners?
I do have a story. Right. And you know what? It's even on our theme today.
That's good.
Our theme today is listening to a wise person's advice. And so I thought I would talk about my Aunt Irene, because I haven't done Aunt Irene on the radio for a really long time. I think maybe the first couple months that I was on the air, I did Aunt Irene, but it's been a long time. So here we go. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
B.I.
B.I. who?
B-I-N-G-O, B-I-N-G-O, B-I-N-G-O-N, bingo is my name, oh. My Aunt Irene, my mother's sister, ran a bingo bus from Brooklyn, New York to Miami, Florida for 20 years, 1968 into the late 80s. My earliest memory of visiting Aunt Irene in Brooklyn is the huge black locomotive of a printing press that filled the basement of her two-story house. It sounded like the city subway train coming into the underground station at Flatbush Avenue. The whole house, or really the whole street, shook when that printing press was running. Now, my mother and Aunt Irene were raised in a nominally Jewish household, but my mom grew up to be a Philadelphia atheist, strayed from two promised lands of the Israelites and Brooklyn. Aunt Irene married Catholic Gennaro Lepera, Uncle Jerry to me, and promised the parish priest that she'd raise Catholic children. She once said to me, "Your Jewish grandmother does not believe in religion. She goes to church, but only to play bingo. She's practical. Christian Scientist, no funny business for her." So Aunt Irene came by her bingoist beliefs and values in the traditional way, through family teachings. This was not something my mother talked about. Once I was off to college in Chicago, majoring, by the way, in the history and philosophy of religion, a puzzling and somewhat annoying enigma to my parents, I didn't see Aunt Irene as often. It was more than a decade later, in the early 1980s that I started wondering what she'd been up to and asking probing questions. And she had a lot to tell me. My bingo play is like traditional. They like the old style bingo cards with the possible number range for each bingo letter printed at the top of each column. B1 to B15, all the way to O61 or to O75. And the free space in the middle of the card always says free space, not some big shot's logo. No funny business. Some of these newer type cards have NBA basketball logos in the squares, or little rhymes printed round the edges of the cards, like the old Burmeshave signs on the highway back in the day. As I lay me down to slumber, all I need is one more number. When the big basket spins to slow, I pray the Lord, I yell bingo. My players can recite you all those rhymes, but they like their bingo cards traditional. I read somewhere that guys who do scary things for a living like to have things predictable and routine at home. Firefighters prefer traditional girls who will reliably have dinner on the table when the guy gets home from work. If you work in a pasta factory and the scariest thing you see in a week is a mangled rigatoni, you might be okay if your wife isn't where you expect her to be at 5 in the evening one night a week. If you dismantle bombs for a living, routines are reassuring. Bingo players in a church hall might like a little mix-up in their bingo cards once in a while. My seniors who jump on buses to play bingo for 23 hours straight down I-95, spend 2 days in Miami playing the casinos, and then 23 hours of bingo back to Brooklyn, they want the traditional bingo cards. They play 8 and 10 cards at a time on their fold-out seat trays on the bus. They want predictable. We print our own bingo cards, you know. We have our own printing press right in the house with us. Jerry, your Uncle Jerry, doesn't even have to leave home to go to work. He could sashay down the wooden steps in the kitchen to the basement and work in his BVDs if he wanted to. At least he could if he kept the shades pulled down. Uncle Jerry was indeed the master of funny business. The green glass steering knob attached to the steering wheel in his car was smudged and chipped, but still beautiful when the sun shone through the windshield and reflected off the green glass of that knob. My first time in Uncle Jerry's car, I noticed that dark green glass knob right away. I'd never seen anything like that on a steering wheel before. So in Uncle Jerry's car, Jerry in the driver's seat and me sitting right behind him, after riding for a bit with Uncle Jerry's hand on that steering knob, I could see the edges of that green glass. Then Uncle Jerry took his right hand off the wheel to downshift, and I saw... a naked lady. A tiny photograph inserted inside that green glass knob. Me, back at the house in Brooklyn. I saw the naked lady. All the adults stopped talking and turned to me in unison. What naked lady? The naked lady on Uncle Jerry's steering wheel. All the grown-ups turned back to their conversations. Only Grandma Rose. And Irene, who I'd been talking to in the first place, said, "Oh, that's just Jerry's entertainment. He's supposed to keep that covered up when there are kids in the car." Jerry's entertainment. She said that whenever we happened upon evidence of one of Uncle Jerry's extracurricular interests. Aunt Irene called them the Bee Trees, beer, baseball, and breasts. I could see the unspoken word balloon over Aunt Irene's head. He would be a lot worse if I let him, but I keep turning him just like the bingo basket. For the...
You need a breath.
I need a breath. Aunt Irene had more than 20 years escaping from Uncle Jerry's funny business to her sanctuary on the big, black, shiny, rumbling, air-conditioned bingo bus. I will end with Aunt Irene's 10 commandments of the bingo bus. Her advice to me. Thou shalt not steal thy neighbor's lucky seat. 2, thou shalt not distract the driver by asking for change while she's driving. Thou shalt not take the caller's name in vain. Thou shalt not threaten to kill the caller. Thou shalt not steal to feed thy gambling Jones. Thou shalt not brag about how much thou hast won. Thou shalt not whine about how much thou hast lost. Thou shalt not call false bingo. Thou shalt not pray for bad luck on the competition. And number 10, no funny business.
That's great. The 10 commandments of bingo.
That's my beloved Aunt Irene.
Boy, that's, I love that story.
I love that story.
I had experience as a bingo caller.
Oh, that's right.
A number of times in my life.
You told me some bingo stories on the way in this morning.
And my sister, my dear sister, who was still living, ran a bus to Atlantic City.
We have a lot to talk about.
Oh, my goodness. For a number of years, monthly. And I went along with her a couple times.
Wow.
And they played bingo on the bus.
Uh-huh.
And she also had a bingo game in the apartment house where she lived. For senior citizens. And sometimes when she was stuck for a caller, she would call me.
Of course she would.
And I would drive down to Baltimore and call bingo.
You were probably everybody's favorite bingo caller.
Especially the ladies who won.
Well, Aunt Irene started out with a bingo bus from Brooklyn to Atlantic City. But then she moved up in the world. And got this huge air-conditioned, brand-new bus.
Wow.
It just blew me away. Okay.
That is amazing. I just love it. So I looked at my notes, and I almost said, Fanny, do you have a story for our listeners?
No, which, first we have a station ID.
I know we do. And I think it'd be a good idea if you gave it.
Oh, uh-oh. Okay. You are listening to Enlighten Radio, the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour. At enlightenradio.org, independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia. And we have today Stash Zielkowski.
And Fanny Crawford.
And we are trying to remember who we are through this program this morning. We're not doing such a good job so far, but it might get better.
I hope I don't introduce myself outside of the studio as... Though that might be fun. Okay. I do have a couple of thoughts about the bingo bus. 23 hours. I'm sure they took a break.
Likely. There were bathrooms on the bus.
Oh,
but
amazing.
You know, yeah. They do like to get off the bus and right. Stretch. We all like to get off the bus and stretch
absolutely.
Our legs.
Yeah, boy. And park. I'm just amazed about the bus. Well, did any men go on that bus?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
It was definitely not 50-50. There were a lot more women, but there were always men on the bus.
Yeah.
She was a serious bingo organizer,
serious,
so
yeah.
Of course there would be men on the bus.
Right. And I really like that story because my experience with my sister, she had that bus going to Atlantic City was so regular for a number of years that the casino where they went, the people from the bus would go to different casinos because they could,
sure.
But the main casino where they went would often comp my sister for a weekend.
Well, they should.
And some money to play.
I guess so.
And that was a lot of fun.
She was their bread and butter.
Oh, yeah. And she loved it. And she won sometimes. But the first time I went with her, I watched her put $1 coins into a machine and hit for $25 and put all 25 back in. And I couldn't believe that she did that.
You're clearly not a slot machine guy.
Oh, but I am. I am, but not dollars.
Ah, okay.
I like to play...
The nickel slots?
Or quarters.
Okay.
I like quarters.
Well, tell me this, Stosh. Would your sister like that story about Aunt Irene?
I think she would.
All right. Well, we'll have to talk about that sometime.
I really think she would. At least, I believe so.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind... You know, getting a copy of that and reading it to my sister the next time I visit her or sometime.
But you can't do Aunt Irene.
You never know.
Okay.
I can't do Aunt Irene. That sounds like you, but I need to practice. Yesterday, Susan mentioned that I should start working with my voice.
Susan Gordon.
Right.
Yeah.
And listen to my wife sing and then find something there that I could imitate, which... It's still a hard concept.
She might have not been talking just the voice. She was also saying the harp.
Right. Oh, I know.
Sounds, yeah. Well, when Susan Gordon gives a storyteller advice, it would behoove the storyteller to attend.
I have good notes, which I did look at my notes last night, even though I thought that might
good
be a little bit, And I have them with me. In case I was bored at your story, I could look at my notes.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
No.
That wouldn't happen. That wouldn't happen. Okay. All right.
Okay.
I think this would be a good time to give a little spiel for stories in the round.
A summary, a synopsis, or at least dates. Okay. May 27th and 28th. Mark your calendars because Kevin Cordy will be here from Ohio. He's doing our May session for Stories in the Round on that Monday, 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown, 13245 Searfoss Pike. But the day before, Sunday, he will be doing a wonderful workshop. And we still have, I think, 3 spaces left in that session based on the number of people that Kevin said he would accept.
Wow.
In that session. So there are not many seats left,
nope.
But if people are interested, they can call me at 301-730-1638. I will give that number one more time to give you time to pick up that pencil and write down 301-730-1638 so that you can call about any of the Stories in the Round sessions, but especially about the one that's next Monday on the 28th and the workshop the day before. After that, in June, we have Andy Offit Irwin coming to Stories in the Round. And every time I say that, I hear a loud sigh from the other side of the room as Stosh Zielkowski realizes once again that he is going to miss some of our time with Andy. But there is a chance that you will get to hear the Monday concert. So let's hope for that.
As long as my wife can get me in the car.
And, okay, and you might even consider like a wheelchair, a temporary one-day wheelchair event so that you can come. Don't, you know, if you're feeling not exhausted and just your legs don't work, then you might consider a wheelchair because you don't want to miss that if there's any possibility.
If there's any possibility, I will be there for the concert. I have to miss the workshop the 2 days before because I'm not allowed out of the house yet.
So... The 18th is Stories in the Round with Andy Offit Irwin. And again, 301-730-1638 for more information or to reserve your space. And You can also reach me at email at fanitsky@hotmail.com, fanitsky@hotmail.com. In July, Magid Melvin Medelitz is coming all the way from Philadelphia to tell sacred stories in the Jewish tradition. He is an ordained Magid, sort of a storytelling rabbi. And I have known Magid Medelitz for almost my entire life. I think I was probably 4 years old or somewhere around there when I first met him. I don't remember meeting him. I always knew him. He taught sixth grade in my public high school, and I was sure he was going to be my sixth grade teacher. I spent my entire elementary school career waiting to be in Mr. Medelitz's class and got his sixth grade teaching partner, Mr. Joseph Sweeney, instead of Melvin Medelitz. But I've recovered, and actually I think maybe I'm working on a story about at least one of them, if not both of them. I'm trying to figure out how to put them both in the same story. I didn't know they were good friends at the time. I thought they were counterpoint in my world. But I learned more recently that they really liked each other and were good friends. And I liked Mr. Sweeney a lot. My father was famous for saying, "Mr. Sweeney said, Mr. Sweeney said, Mr. Sweeney said, we don't want to know what Mr. Sweeney said today." So apparently I did like Mr. Sweeney quite a bit. All right. What's next on the agenda?
Well, I had a Mr. Sweeney, but not as a teacher, but as a co-teacher. Mr. Sweeney was a chemistry teacher in Baltimore County, and he was a great friend of mine and a mentor.
Well, I'm sure he was a fine man.
He was wonderful.
The Sweeneys have done a great deal for civilization in our time.
Yes. Okay, so next is, I have a story.
Aha!
Aha. And
on the same theme.
Yes. Yes.
Which is
whatever it says on this paper here.
Good advice from wise.
Listening to wise, a wise person's advice. Now, and you can judge this story afterwards. It will be in a different flavor than Aunt Irene's. I have learned this story from a friend in Pittsburgh who attended a storytelling guild meeting a number of years ago, and the guild that I was in Pittsburgh liked people to show up, and anybody could tell a story. It was a welcoming place, and if you wanted advice, there were always people who would give you advice, sometimes even if you didn't want advice. And but if you just wanted to try a story and said, you know, you just wanted to get it out of your mouth and see what people looked like as you were saying it, then that was fine too. And Laura Lovick Lindsay is her name, is a published author. She writes short stories and has written a novel. And she brought a story one night to our guild, and as soon as she finished reading it, I asked her, I slipped a piece of paper to her with a question on it, "May I tell this story?" Because I just fell in love with it the first time I heard it. And I have told this story before. And so here's A Fisherman's Tale by Laura Lovick Lindsay. The summer's fishing had not been kind to Brander, nor the spring prior to that. His wife Fina was hungrier than ever, her swollen belly pushing the table every time she sat. Another child was well on the way. Brander hoped for a seventh boy and made what sparse offerings he could afford to the gods in that hope. But as of late, the gods seemed to have turned their backs on him. Brander picked his way up the path between the cliffs that led to the top, where his house stood. He was careful not to step on the sea-sprayed mosses that flavored those rocks. He trudged the hill homeward empty, nothing to take to market. The other men of the village steered their boats to the far part of the harbor, closer to market. It was easier this way, their nets straining to contain their haul. Only a short year before, Brander would have been among them, choking and unloading while the youngest boys of the village raced to be first to help bring the catch ashore. But these days he found he was no longer welcome among the men. His bad luck might be catching. They became quiet and elbowed one another when he passed. All laughter and joking stopped when he walked near. Silence but for the winds and the water. Instead, village hands busied themselves, stretching forth nets to be repaired before putting again out to sea. The eyes of those too old to fish looked down at their table work as they cut open the catch, gutting and cleaning, to dry some of the day's bounty to put by for winter. Sparse wisps of smoke drifted from the chimney of Brander's lone cottage in its place upon the cliffs. Unlike those two close cottages in the village, clustered and almost huddled together for warmth from the winter winds that would begin very soon, the chimney smells reached to him now, bringing forth a scent of seaweed soup for yet one more night. Their own supply of dried fish had run out in the early part of spring. He came in as quietly as he could, but the boys saw him and ran to his side, the older ones helping him take off his coat, the younger ones pleading the dreaded question, "How many fish today, Father?" To this he gave no answer but continued to pull off his boots, rubbing his feet. The older boys, glaring, punched their younger brothers who dared ask that question. Finna squatted at the fire, stirring and scooping and handing the bowls. She smiled at Brander all the way to her eyes and handed him the largest steaming bowl. He noted every day there was more seaweed and less from their tiny garden, but the coming winter sea could not continue to be generous. Brant's face grayed over at this thought. At night, he turned away from Finna in bed, ashamed to face her. He turned his face instead toward the wall that sided the sea. Finna reached over and stroked his hair and kissed the back of his neck. "I will go tomorrow and see what wise Infrid. She will tell us how to restore our luck." Brander was quiet. He did not wish to be in debt to a witch. His whisper held great reluctance. "You know we cannot pay her." Finna shrugged. She was untroubled. "She will pay herself. We will give her half the fish she helps you to bring in." The following evening, as he walked through his door, Finna caught his eye with a small nod and tight, nervous smile. There was much to do. She sent the boys to collect wood for the night's fire while she whispered, "Horse," over the soup, drawing with her fingers on the table. The next morning, Brander awoke with much earlier than usual. He picked his way carefully to the beach, sliding down sometimes in his haste to begin his morning's work. He readied his boat and made as though to leave in it, but then paused and looked around. It was time. He walked the strand of the beach, picking up many small rocks and piling them near the boat. The pile grew as an hour passed, 2 hours. He had enough. He began placing them in the sand, almost in full circles, around an empty center. Some of these curves he connected with others, some he left alone, uncompleted. When his work was finished, he stood back and had the thought that what he had created looked rather like the ripples of waves that came forth when a stone was tossed into the sea on a fair weather day. Following Enfred's careful instructions, he now entered this labyrinth, slowly, giving the fae that were plaguing him time to follow. When he reached the center, he paused a moment and then jumped as far as he could outside his many circles and ran for his waiting boat. He pushed off, paddling as hard and fast as he could, the sea heavy on his oars, hopeful. He knew the fae could not cross or leap the lines of the labyrinth as could he. It might take them hours to work their way out. Brander paddled until he was so far from shore that even the cliffs of home could no longer be seen easily. Brander walked quickly up the hill to home late, late that night, laughing sometimes as he slipped on the mosses. It had taken extra time to row toward market and unload. So full was his boat of fish of all kinds. He had stopped in the village and to let some of the men buy him drinks. It had taken longer than he had thought. He rejoiced in the many coins in his pocket and the more that were coming. He had just crested the hill when a figure emerged from their cottage. A few steps closer, he recognized Ingfrid, carrying a small wrapped bundle. She turned in his direction, wrapped her shawl tighter around the bundle. She faced him defiantly, then spun toward her home beyond the village and stalked away. Brander stood and watched her for many minutes, then went inside where six boys were already sleeping. He climbed into bed next to the now empty, weeping Finna, stroked her hair, and kissed the back of her neck. Seated before her fire in her own cottage, Ingfrid drew the child nearer to her. Few questions would be asked by people in the village. They remembered well what happened to those who had dared to question Ingfrid before. The child slept, sated for now by goat's milk, a seventh son. It had been an easy process, leading the Fae to Brander the previous spring. She felt no pangs of conscience. It was the best possible outcome for all concerned. Who better than she justified herself, to bring up a seventh son. She would know how best to further his ability. He would never starve in her cottage. He would know and even play with his brothers. Secrets weren't easily kept in a small village, and as for Brander and Finna, well, it certainly wouldn't be long before they added an eighth, ninth, and tenth child. Ingrid thought she might even slip Finna some herbs to speed the process along. The child stirred slightly. She picked him up, holding him in the firelight, and began to sing.
Oh, my.
Isn't that wonderful?
That's an amazing story.
Yes, and I'm so glad that Laura has a book of stories published.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get it.
It's Tales the Crows Taught Me, and it's filled with wonderful stories.
It's lovely.
And she has a real knack with stories that could be off-putting or...
Yeah, like that one.
A little scary,
mm-hmm.
But I think she's a wonderful writer. And on another of her tales that I tell, I'll use some time on air, is really wonderful, the short piece that isn't about advice. But anyway,
you know, that becomes a different story just by spotlighting our theme today.
Yes.
It puts a different frame around the picture, around the
yes.
story. Very interesting.
The wise woman was a witch, mm-hmm. who told them how to listen to her so that it would change their fate in some way. But there's always a price.
Yeah.
It's interesting. There was a different ending to that story when I first heard
really?
It.
Really?
Yes. It just ended the first time I saw it and heard it, which was a number of years ago. It ended with Brander seeing the witch at the door, and she walked away with a bundle. And the last... description was him holding his wife in bed and caressing her now empty belly, and they were both crying.
It's a horror story told that way.
Oh yes,
but this way it just makes you pause and
right.
think about choices and
yes.
Acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And
I did tell that on Halloween a few years ago when I did six horror stories with a dance troupe. I was the only voice heard throughout the whole performance. And these wonderful, wonderful, serious dancers interpreted the stories on stage by their motions and their bodies. And that was one of their favorites. They actually, I actually was asked to audition to tell their at their performance. And for 2 months we worked. And the first two meetings I had with them, I just told stories. And they selected the six stories that I would tell in the performance.
Hmm.
It was a great experience. I'd love to do something like that again. Unfortunately, I now do not live very close to the dancers. So, I'm glad you enjoyed that story.
Oh, I loved it. That was wonderful. And the idea of changing the ending of a story with just a couple sentences to create a whole different mood and story, that's amazing.
Right. One of the things that when I first met Laura, that and made me very interested in her work, is that she wrote me an email and said, you should sign up for this. She sent me a website, and there are different kind of storytelling websites or story writing websites. And there's one that has a 24-hour story. You pay $5 to get in. And once you have paid, and you have to do that at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have paid, they send you the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And you have 24 hours to produce a story.
Oh.
And it has to be, it's certain limit of words, and it was a real challenge.
What a cool idea!
You know, and it was great. I thought it was a wonderful idea, and I like the idea of giving someone a hint and having them tell a story. I've done it in performances. Where I've performed for a group similar to the one you mentioned earlier, the writers,
mm-hmm.
and something. I had an imaginary bag, and we were in a room, and I introduced it by saying, the door slammed shut, there were no lights, the electricity was out, there was no light outside, everything was dark, and in order to keep everybody from panicking, I said, I have a bag with stuff in it. I'm going to pass it. And when you get the bag, reach in it and feel around, take something out and tell us what you chose. And we'll pass the bag. And I was working with a little bit, I think 34, 35 people who wanted to learn about storytelling so that they could tell the people they had spent a year with in a special program about their experience on the jobs that they had through this program. And it was an amazing thing that happened. You know, one person pulled out an object and said, it has a button on, and pushed the button, and it was a flashlight. And of course, it was imaginary, but she described how safe she felt with the flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
And the largest person in that room, who was a man in his 30s, he was also the oldest person in the group, other than me, pulled out a puppy and held the puppy and described how nice it meant to hold the puppy because now he wasn't so afraid of the dark. And that was just, imagine, all spontaneous. So
lovely, lovely, lovely.
Yeah. So, I think we should have a station ID. You're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org from Bolivar, West Virginia. And this is Fanny Crawford.
And Stosh Zielkowski.
Broadcasting.
I hope we're not confusing anybody besides ourselves.
Boy, that lady has a funny voice.
Stosh Zielkowski.
There you go. Can't do it. I'm off. Okay, so I think we need an update on Speak Story Series in Shepherdstown, West Virginia.
And you are just the person to do that.
I think so, especially since I'm the one with the notes. But of course, you may have it memorized.
No, I do not have it memorized by any means. There's so many of them.
I know.
For months and months and months.
June 12th, Scott Whitehair from Chicago.
Woohoo!
A younger storyteller. I don't think he's quite 50. So
that is very, very young.
Yeah.
And Chicago, my old stomping grounds.
Right. And he has a couple of programs there. This Much Is True is one of them. He produces that program. And he tells personal tales. And he has an open mic program as well. I should practice opening my mouth speaking. And that's called Do Not Submit. And I have never heard it, but I'm curious when.
Yeah, you know, interesting theme.
Right. And unfortunately, he picked a bad day to appear in Shepherdstown. I'm going to be resting that evening. Okay, July.
Interesting. I do not plan my rest days quite that far in advance, but I understand there are mitigating circumstances in this case.
Yes, the doctor said that was the day he wanted to do the procedure. So July 10th, Dovey Thomason.
I'm so glad Dovey's coming
back.
I am too,
and I will definitely be at that one.
Yes.
You know.
Many people will.
Right. She's going to do a program, How the West Was Spun, which will reveal lots of things about the tales we know of the western part of our country that are a little bit embellished by some of the people who came here.
Yeah, I know she tells stories like that or does presentations in that vein for groups all over the country and has been part of various federal projects about Native American indigenous people's stories, but I have never heard her do them myself.
Well, so. I'm looking forward to it because all of my knowledge about the West until very recently in my life came from Westerns and TV shows.
I thought you were going to say from nuns.
And some came from nuns who talked about the West, though I'm not sure where they got their information. In August, Corrine Stavish will be here, and her program is going to be When Good People Do Something. She'll be talking about the people of Denmark who helped to save many thousands of Jewish lives by doing something.
During World War II.
During World War II, right. Donald Davis, September 11th. I definitely will make that one. I would walk to the college to see that. So Donald Davis, one of the most revered storytellers in the country. And October 9th, Linda Gorham, Twists and Unconventional Humor, and she tells twisted fairy tales. That will be fun. I love those kind of things. November 13th, Megan Wells, Classical Literature and Old Tales. And I'm looking forward to her also because I did see her last year at Jonesboro, and I was thrilled. And then on December 11th, because her performance was snowed out earlier this year, Elizabeth Ellis will be here. And once again, I'll be looking forward to that. She is one of my favorite persons in the whole world.
She has such wisdom in her stories and very entertaining delivery as well.
And is very kind. The last time I saw Elizabeth, I asked for her address. Her home address.
You're going to go visit her?
No, I wanted to write to her.
Oh.
I told her that I like writing letters, and I would ask her if she would be willing to receive a letter from me. And she did, and she answered. And so I'm going to write another one.
Very good.
It was a wonderful, very, very nice letter, and made me feel like I was somebody.
I didn't know this about you. I've known you for a while now, and I didn't know you were a committed letter writer. Oh, this is wonderful.
I have two very large binders full of letters.
That's right. I remember you do have
Jay
some
Butler
correspondence.
And I corresponded for many years, and we taught together for 19 years. And after he left the Baltimore area, we lost contact for a short while, and then I was able to make contact with him again. And for 20 years, we wrote back and forth to each other. We never used the computer. And many of mine were handwritten letters because I like to write by hand. And I worked really hard at that because he was an English teacher. He never graded my grammar because he knew it was poor. But he died in 2015. It was a big loss.
Yeah.
Because we wrote, I have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of letters, and we kept in close contact. So,
well, I've been thinking a little more about letter writing. I've always been a letter writer. I'm not at all regular or disciplined about it, but I do love to write letters, and it's a way of expressing gratitude and just keeping in touch with people. But one of my nieces has now moved to New Zealand. And I was talking to my brother yesterday, and of course things came up that I think about all the time but don't necessarily do anything about them until my little brother calls, and I use little in clearly in only the symbolic sense because he's much taller than I am, and actually probably somewhat wiser as well. But he was telling me about the move of my niece Leah and her husband to New Zealand, and some of what they got by moving there is wonderful and was exactly as they anticipated and planned. And some of it was not quite, as it always is when you go to a new place and commit to a new lifestyle. They both work in healthcare, so they have pretty much guaranteed jobs, and they're going to do quite well for themselves. But one of the facts that I had not thought about is not only how far away New Zealand is and how far it would be, how hard it will be for me to get there, but one of the ways I've always stayed in touch with my nieces is by sending them little love packages or care packages, games when they were little and books and things like that. It costs so much money to mail a package to New Zealand because it's so far. So a letter is not at all expensive. It's pretty much the standard international rate, mm-hmm. if there is such a thing. But to send even a small package, just a couple books, can be a large amount of money. And to send a box can be $100. So I'm clearly not going to be sending a lot of packages to my New Zealand niece. But I think I'm going to have to become a little more disciplined about my letter writing. And my other niece, my brother's older daughter, lives in California, so I don't see her as often as I would like to either. And if I'm going to write to one niece, I absolutely have to write to the other one. So,
wow.
I think I know what I'll be doing at least one afternoon a month from now on.
It was a very fulfilling. Jay and I were best friends for 43 years, and I looked forward to his letters like a little kid looks forward to Christmas. Mm-hmm. And he often mentioned that the same. And we visited each other. We actually vacationed in New Orleans for a week together, his wife and my wife and Jay and I, and had just an absolutely wonderful time. And one of the things we did in many of our letters that he started was haikus.
And we should do a program on haikus.
I just agree with you wholeheartedly.
You anticipated me.
I thought maybe we could do something like that because it's a wonderful form. And some people write haikus and don't follow the form. And I'm one of those people, when I see a haiku and it doesn't follow the form, I think, what is wrong with you?
That's cheating.
Boy, would you get a bad mark from Jay.
Well, we can't do a program on haikus next week because we have Kevin Cordy will be on air right. with us.
We might surprise him and say, quick, Kevin, tell us a haiku. and
he could do it.
I wouldn't doubt it. And so.
Well, for yeah. beyond that, we will come up right. with
I think that's a good idea.
That.
Okay. That's a very interesting and challenging way to express something mm-hmm. because it is structured.
Is it 17 syllables? Do I have that right?
It's 5, 7, 5.
5, 7, 5. Okay. Yep. Obviously, I have some work to do.
Well.
So, but so there'll be little stories.
Yes.
5, 7, 5 stories.
Yes.
That's actually a better even name for a show. It's 5, 7, 5 stories.
That would be.
All right. I just wrote that down.
Brilliant co-host. And I don't use that word lightly.
He doesn't say that about all his co-hosts.
No,
I want you to know.
I only say that about one other person who's brilliant. Oh.
Okay, we are just about out of time. We have a few more minutes. I see on our plan that we sometimes use and sometimes don't. That you had the possibility of another story
oh, yes.
for today.
Yes.
Do you have a story that will fit into half of those remaining minutes?
I think so. And you can cut me off when you...
Never.
Give me a signal and I'll wrap it up.
Okay.
Okay. So, one of the most influential people I ever met in my life was a vacuum cleaner salesman. A man by the name of George Lee, who is deceased. But in 1976, I was painting during the summer. I was a teacher, and in order to make money during the summer, in spite of what some people think, teachers don't get paid a yearly salary for teaching 9 months, and they don't teach 9 months. The summer break is not 3 whole months. We always go into June and start in August, so if you work out the math. So I always had to work in the summertime to supplement my income and to try to have enough money to go on a vacation. I was doing house painting. Two men came to the house and sold us a vacuum cleaner. And we desperately needed a vacuum cleaner. And when they were leaving and I walked them out to their car, the man said, so you're a painter? And I said, well, I'll do it for the summer. He told me. My boss wants our office painted. Here, this is his number. Why don't you call him and tell him you're a painter? And so I did. And he hired me. The problem was I had to do the painting at night because it was a business office. And it was a tough job. The back room had exposed pipes that were painted, and they were full of crackly paint that needed to be scraped off. So it was also a dirty job. The first night I was there, George Lee was working in his office in the front, and I was scraping paint, chipping paint off of the pipes. And after a couple hours, he came in and had 2 Cokes in his hand, and that's not an advertisement, and said, come on down the ladder and take a break. Tell me about yourself. And we began talking. He found out that I had a degree. I was a teacher and I had a master's degree. And he set down his Coke and said, you should stop this. You should sell vacuum cleaners for me. And I just I laughed. I said, I can't sell vacuum cleaners. He said, you're kidding. Of course you can. You teach high school kids. If you can get high school kids to listen to you, you can get housewives to hear about vacuum. So, and he promised me that if I didn't make $400 in the first full week I worked, that he would give me $400 plus pay me to paint his house, which would be the rest of the summer job I needed. And so I went home and told the family I was going to try selling vacuum cleaners. I got almost no support. When I started working for George, he taught me some simple things. Knock on every door in the street. Always be polite. And don't bug people. If they say, I'm not interested, do not try to change their mind. Just go next door. because there are thousands and thousands and thousands of homes that need vacuum cleaners. And arguing doesn't do any good. If you have to argue your way in the door, you're just wasting your time because you'll wind up arguing about. And his advice was great. He gave me number advice. Knock on every door. Take a break. Get something to eat and drink. Knock on every door and have as your goal a minimum of 25 people that you talk to. And a minimum of 6 people who you speak to who do more than just talk to you at the door, who show some interest. Because if 6 people show some interest, at least 2 of them will let you in. And sometimes many more. And once you're in the house, out of every 4 houses that you actually show your equipment to the people, you will sell a vacuum cleaner. This is all based on excellent statistics derived by the company. And I did that. And so for 8 summers, I sold vacuum cleaners. It was the best job, other than teaching, I ever had. And so it was following excellent advice from George Lee that helped me to take my family to the beach some summers, 2 weeks. So thanks, George.
I love that story. I've heard that story before, and I love it because he sounds like such a wise man. I wouldn't necessarily expect such wisdom from a vacuum cleaner salesman. Of course, he was a very, very successful
vacuum cleaner and salesman. He quit a very good job in a rug binding company as a young man to sell vacuum cleaners door to door. And when I met him, he was a man in his late 40s, but he was also a millionaire.
I can understand that. Yeah.
It was a very good business. It's too bad you can't go door to door anymore.
Well, he knew people so well. Really interesting. Well, I'm going to close out the show. I do first want to remind our listeners that you can hear podcasts of today's show as well as past programs from the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at talltales.enlightenradio.org. So go in there and mess around and see what you find. I guarantee you, you'll find something that you like. But this is Fanny Crawford.
And Stash Ziolkowski.
See, I told you we were forgetting who we were. Your co-hosts for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. We are independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. I'm closing out this week's show, but we'll be back next Monday at 12 noon. The Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for
Art Pepper.
Art Pepper, more jazz.
See you next week.